Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on Job 1 for Humanity, Climate Restabilization.
Come visit UniverseSpirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.
It's December 15th, 2015. This is Inside Out, The Naked Truth, coming to you live tonight from Lupin Lodge, where it's kind of chilly outside in the Santa Cruz Mountains of California. And here at Lupin, clothing is optional. Well, it's a little cold to be optional tonight, but the truth is always naked. And I'm Errol Strider.
And I am Rochelle Alicia Strider. And we welcome you to our home at Lupin Lodge. We invited you over tonight for some conversation about the human condition and what to make of it, sprinkled with laughter, good music, and a few surprises.
Our time is sponsored by Go Raw, 100% raw food. That not only tastes good, but it's good for you. And we also have a co-sponsor now, Universe Spirit. And Universe Spirit, their emphasis is that the job one for humanity is to deal with this climate change. And we'll tell you more about our sponsors a little later, but that's a good lead into something that we really need to do, Rochelle, and that, well, let's face it, we are having some serious climactic tribulations, and so that's why our program tonight is called
Let's Face It.
Let's face it. And we are going to face it.
I wrote this silly little thing that says, let's say it is the truth. What truth? The reality of what is. What's that? Okay, whatever. Do we face it or deny it or face away from it? Questions have to come up when we deal with whatever it is. So let's face the questions. Let's make that it.
Okay, that works for me, but that was another program.
Well, maybe it was.
Well, let's face it. We have a really interesting dilemma here. I read this in this week's copy of The Week magazine. It says, in 1960, only 5% of Republicans and 4% of Democrats said they would be upset if their son or daughter married someone affiliated with the other political party. 5 decades later, that would be now, 49% of Republicans and 33% of Democrats said they'd be distressed by a politically mixed marriage. Just mounting evidence how this huge schism is setting us into not just partisanship, but extreme polarity. And he concludes in his excerpt from the article, partnership now strongly influences our choice of friends, where we choose to live, what sources of information we allow into our homes and devices, even who we love.
Let's face it. When we live in a world where separation is queen, we're always looking for ways to separate ourselves from each other. It's endemic. Okay, so, I'll separate myself from you because blue-eyed people, and then there's brown-eyed people, or Republicans and Democrats, or different faiths, different cultures, whatever it takes to separate me from you, I'll use, because that's where I'm coming from.
Let's face it. As the Course in Miracles says, and I was thinking about this as I was meditating the other day, let me recognize the one problem so that it can be solved. And the one problem is the issue of separation, and the solution is what the Course calls forgiveness. Let's face into that just a little bit. What is that dynamic that allows us to begin to dissipate this anxiousness that builds into these walls that perpetuates the separation so that we do not recognize ourselves in one another? We don't even recognize ourselves in ourself.
I would say that's true. Let's face it. If you are looking for ways to feel safe and you don't know you're safe, you always have to build barricades. And judgment is a perfect, beautiful barricade. So you have to judge someone, something, and judgments are separators.
Hello, good evening. This is Lord Umbridge, Professor Umbridge, for most of you know me, and I'm so delighted to be here. I would like to emphasize, if I may, this whole issue, we talked about it, and some of you who are listening to our show may think the Striders and I and the other guests they have here harp on this issue. Well, it's because we're not facing it. Just recently, I've been rereading the biography of Winston Churchill, one of our dear forebears in this jolly old England. Well, it wasn't so jolly at that time. I'm quite impressed with the fact that the pre-war, the Neville Chamberlain and his group there, who were running Britain at the time, really didn't want to face it. And because of that, Mr. Herr Hitler was able to dupe them quite successfully. And as a result, I would say, largely on his shoulders and those who supported that position, that millions and millions of people unnecessarily suffered and went to the death. I understand. You don't hang something like that on one person. The whole culture is contributing to it, and he kind of embodied that persona, as Tolstoy says. Isn't that right, Professor Bublikov? That Tolstoy was like, he was like saying in the book, his most great book, Peace and War, War and Peace, he was like saying the people think that it's like the leaders are causing the problem, but it's not the leaders, it's the people give birth out of the consciousness that they're sharing and gravitating to that gives birth to the kind of leader who fits their level of consciousness. Well, I would say that's true, actually. And so in order to move past that, we have to begin to, well, as you say, face it. And what is it that we're needing to face? Professor Bublikov. Well, as you know, we'd like to face who we really are. It's like not facing outside all the time to get identity, with like people do in the capitalist, you know. It used to be like identity was communist and capitalist, but now it is like Republican here in your country and you got the Democrat and they're making war with each other. And it's not enough war out there, they're making war at home. It must be addressed, and they must face it at some point. So who then, I would ask the question, who then is the people that are ready to face it?
May I answer that question, professors?
Jolly good, please, Rochelle.
I think that the people who are ready to face it are people who have faced themselves and realize that they're more than the external
idiosyncratic aspects of ourselves.
That's right. Thank you very much.
There you have.
There was a movie with Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise, and it was a Army, Navy, I can't remember what.
It was a big trial.
Yes. And at the trial, Tom Cruise said to Jack Nicholson, "I want the truth." And Jack Nicholson looked at him and he says, "You can't handle the truth." I think that's a clue. It's like, what are we facing? You know, like, if it makes us feel small, we don't want to look at it. Our egos need to be out there and, you know, that I'm special and I have importance. And it comes from the outside world. And as long as it keeps coming from the outside world, we have to make sure nobody can take it away from us. When you realize that it comes from within, nobody can take it away from you. See, that's what we're not facing. We're not facing who we truly are.
Let's face it. That's just how it is.
I can help if you don't understand. The beginning is always further away than the end. You can hide behind all its brick and lead, but love reveals everything you'll ever have. Time will always come for you. That's how it is, how it is. That's just how it is. And I will try to comfort you. That's how it is, that's just can take these hands and take this face, but you'll be wrong if you think that everyone will be replaced. We all break plans and make mistakes, but they never seem to matter much at the end of the day. Time will always come for you. That's how it is, how it is. That's just how it is. And I will try to comfort you. That's how it is, how it is. That's just how it is. A farewell kiss will never mean goodbye, 'cause it holds on to the promises I made with these eyes. I'll leave you everything that's mine if you say that you'll meet me in the next life.
That's Paul Freeman singing That's How It Is. His lyric, Time Will Always Come For You. It's like we have a very short time on this planet, and we are hopefully coming to realize that, as he says in his lyrics here, that love is on the face, and the comfort is awaiting for us. I think it's interesting, not interesting, profound, enlightening. One of the greatest things I've ever encountered, yeah, that's interesting, is the phenomenon of Jesus in terms of what he seemed to precipitate or ignite in the human domain, and what was made possible by his participating among us. The metaphor I like to use, for those of you who may have seen Back to the Future, and there's a scene where they're in the past or the future, I don't remember which way they were going, but they had to get back, and he found out that there was going to be a lightning. It was going to hit the top of the library tower, and they was going to capture that lightning charge, and the cables were going to ignite the car so he could get back to the present, I guess. But what happened was is the cable broke, and so the lightning charge couldn't get to the car. And he, the professor, I forgot his name, that wonderful actor who played that part, he grabbed the two ends of the cable, and his body was the conduit through which that charge was passing. He took on the charge in order to allow that connection to be made so that we can get back to the, in this case, in our case, present. And in many ways, I see that as the unique contribution of Yeshua ben Joseph, in that he kind of saw this broken cable, this broken humanity, which is showing signs again of its decided brokenness. But by being the conduit, he was able to facilitate the empowering of that which it takes to get life moving, in this case, the car.
I don't see that it's broken again. I don't think it has been fixed yet. When you plant a seed for a mighty tree, it takes a long time for that tree to grow. And I see that that conduit was a seed that was planted. Humanity is so young, so immature, so incapable at this point in time of reaching certain points, but it's there. The road is there. The path has been given to us. The seeds have been planted, and it's a matter of getting mature enough, or the ground being fertile enough, for us to truly grow. I guess because of that, even though I get so depressed sometimes about the way people treat each other, it just hurts my heart. I'm also aware at another level, not always the emotional level, that we're just so young and we just don't know any better, and that we are growing and there are a few people amongst us, I don't know how many, but a few who are more aware than others and are more willing to lay down the carpet for love.
Hello, this is Rabbi Greenberg. Speaking of that, I've been counting the people. You said you didn't know how many people there are. The last count I was counting was like 89,407,000. No, it's going, it's changing. I can't keep track of it. But there's at least 89 million people that we have counted that are people like who are waking up and going, all right, I'm willing to step into looking and seeing. I'm willing to face it. It's just they don't know each other. They look, they see each other in the street. They don't go, are you one of the 89 million and counting? Nah, who's counting?
I think sometimes you do. You know, you have a random encounter with a human being and you don't even say anything. You just look at each other and there's something passes between you and you know that that's a person who's, you coined that phrase, on the grow. You know, that they're searching out. They're not willing to accept the status quo. They want to go beyond it. They want to go underneath it, above it, whatever. They want the moreness. There's a lady we know. She was on the path for 30 years. She's been inquiring.
Right.
And you can see it in her face. She has joy in her face. And I think that's the telltale signs, let's face it, of love, is that there's a joy in people's eyes. There's an aliveness. They're not on the treadmill of mediocrity.
That's what I was going to say. That's how you know it, by the joy. If you're not having joy, and joy is not like, you know, being happy because you just made a good deal on a sale or you got your new house fixed or the plumbing's better than you hoped it was, even. It was great. It's not about conditional, like love. They talk about unconditional love. When people say, oh, that means your love is unconditional. But what I realized, in my understanding and looking at it, it means for me that no matter what condition you're in, whether it's physical, finite, mental, emotional, whatever it is, love is there. It's in every condition. That means it's always available for the asking, for the seeking. You're willing to face it. You have to be willing to face love. And for some people, like you say, they're immature, but other people, they have to hit a point of desperation, and what's happening for them is so not working, they get dissatisfied with themselves, and they look in the mirror, and they go, hey, 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 could you be different? Or what's it going to take? Well, that's where this spirit of truth, this igniting that you are talking about of Jesus, you know, and with the lightning bolt. And what it did is it released an energy into the planet, which is, he was called it, the Comforter, which is interesting because of the lyric of the song you made there, that we will be comforted. And that's a good thing. If you haven't had comfort in a long time, face it. Get some comfort. It's available for you.
I think sometimes a comfort is on a really cold night. You got a warm, warm blanket next to a little heater. And you're just so warm and cozy and it's delicious and you want to just sleep into that space. It's so comforting. Hot soup on a cold night is comforting. Cold ice stick on a hot night is comforting. I love the word comfort. The very word feels like a down blanket. Comfort.
Living in a clothing optional community and people come who maybe aren't comfortable with the option not to wear clothes. And so I will say to them, let me slip into something less comfortable. By that, I mean,
get dressed.
But let's face it. Let's just take a minute and face it and see what we find.
Yeah. I love the way you laugh. I love the way you smile. I love the way you act. You got your own style. Let's face it. let's face it, you're feeling blue 'cause you look different. It's no fun when you get funny looks, but life is not a beauty pageant, and pretty covers don't make good books. Let's face it, I love the way you laugh.
Let's face it,
I love the way you smile.
Let's face it,
I love the way you act.
Let's face it,
you got your own style. Let's face it, let's face it. Now everybody gets embarrassed. Well, that's just the way we are. If we're alive, then we're not perfect. Everybody's got some scars. So come on, let's face it. Sometimes you're feeling great.
Let's face it.
Sometimes you wanna die.
Let's face it.
You're feeling sorry, mate.
Let's face it.
Yeah, that's where the problem lies.
Let's face it.
Do you love the way you laugh?
Let's face it.
Love yourself with all your heart.
Let's face it.
Do you love the way you act?
Well,
don't you think it's time to start?
Come on,
let's face it. Sometimes you're feeling great.
Let's face it.
Sometimes you're falling apart.
Let's face it.
Sometimes you hesitate.
Let's face
to
it.
To love yourself with all your heart.
Let's face it.
Don't worry about what you're not.
Let's face it.
Think about the things you got.
Let's face it.
He loves the way you laugh. And she loves the way you smile.
Let's face it.
We love the way you act.
Let's face
and
it.
You got your own style.
Oh, that was cute.
Peter Alsop writes songs for kids, the kid in us. If you were able to respond to that, oh ye listeners out there, with an open heart and kind of an innocent, yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah, that'd be cool. I could do that. Then I would suggest you're just like opening the door of the beginner's mind, which is why Yeshua suggested that in order to move into this new consciousness where you recognize the union of it all, you have to have a childlike trust and openness and willingness to engage everything anew so that the let's face it, is filled with wonder like our granddaughter.
Oh, who's, yeah.
What, 9, 10 months old?
9 months old. And you know, when you said that, I held her in front of me and her little legs were on my thighs. We were face to face. And she was just looking at me, like taking me in, my face, my eyes, my nose, my mouth, what I was wearing, and she was touching all of my shoulders, and then she was touching my face and my hair, and she was just absorbing me. There was no separation between her and I. And I realized that we lose that as we grow older, and self-consciousness rears its little head in our bodies, and we don't know what to make of ourselves. But at that age of innocence, it's so, she was absorbing me. And I was absorbing her. And it was just a complete moment. And you think, well, how many people do you have that with? Maybe a lover. Even your good friends, you don't get that close where you're just absorbing each other. It's very hard. We're afraid to have that kind of absorption. If I absorb you, I'll absorb all your crinkly, icky stuff that you judge. So you're going to have to push off and not allow me to do that.
If I may jump in here, this is Senator Beauregard, Tex, for those of you who I know and love, and vice versa, or vice versa, depending upon whether you're going front or back. Anyway, what I would like to suggest here is this is precisely why in the human party, and our belief is that we have a mission for this here country, which is to form a more perfect union, and seeing how all this divisiveness just keeps popping up and increasing periodically, it's time for a union again. Now, in the past, what has facilitated the union, like, for example, why the colonies here joined up, was to fight a common enemy. And indeed, we may have a common enemy, if that's what it takes, which may be the whole climate change. Thank you, Universe Spirit, for making this such an important part of your mission. But for those of you who would like to wake up before the enemy gets so common that it's just everywhere and all the time, and you have to deal with it, like, for example, you were talking about the Nazis back there, Professor Umbridge, and out there the enemy was like everywhere you turned, especially if you were Jewish. Well, the Jewish folks out there that
time. Well, you weren't Aryan, and that was enough.
That's right.
And today, the Muslim extremists, if you're not a Muslim, you're an infidel, and if you're an infidel, that's enough.
That's my point. We try and demonize us. This party demonizes that party. This here belief system and religion demonizes that party. It seems like we have such a difficult time in knowing ourselves without this heightened distinction that borders on and actually includes hatred. So what I propose here is that take advantage of the innocent time of a person's life, and that's to give them the opportunity, the young children, because they're influenced at that point by the family and the school system and the media, of course, and to give them an experience of being able to stay open and feel safe. So we need to make safety one of our most important objectives, which is why they put it in the preamble of the Constitution, and that is to ensure domestic tranquility. See, that's like in our homes. And that's where it starts. And we in the human party, we try and support the home life, however you define home, as the people who are closest to you, and provide you with the support and the tools, I might add, to be able to communicate with each other in such a way that you are moving toward the greater unity.
It's interesting. I was talking to someone today, and she talked about her father being distant. He didn't really emotionally open up to his children. At the same time, she made the statement that he was more emotionally mature than her mother, who was like all over everybody. And I thought that was an interesting distinction, that she saw that distance as a maturity because that he was dealing with his emotions but not spilling them all over everybody. Our progression, our journey is not black and white. It's got so many colors and so many gradations. To absorb it all, to be open to the multifacetedness of life's journey, to me is what creates, well, what creates the deliciousness of it. Let's face it, I want to feel good. Don't you want to feel good? Of course we want to feel good. There's levels of feeling good versus pleasure, and it's only material. Then there's the joy and the feeling good inside you, and it doesn't even matter what the outside looks like. But it comes down to wanting to feel good.
So, in other words, we have to wake up.
We have to wake up.
Wake me up.
Feeling my way through the darkness. They tell me I'm too young to understand. They say I'm caught up in a dream. Well, life will pass me by if I don't open up my eyes. So that's fine by me. So wake me up. Stay forever this young, not afraid to close my eyes. Life's a game made for everyone, and love is the prize. So wake me up when it's all over, when I'm wiser and I'm older. All this time I was finding myself, and I
So Wake Me Up When It's All Over by Avicii. We played them last week, and we played a song by them. We played Feeling Good, and what I didn't mention at that time was that Audra May sang the vocal on that version of Feeling Good, and we're going to hear from Audra May tonight because I like her, and she has something to say about this whole thing about waking up, and it's kind of in keeping with the theme of that song. He talks about being lost. It's a curious lyric, you know, wake me up when it's over. When what's over? When the sleeping is over, yeah?
And definitely wake me up when the sleeping is over. I just had this strange experience. I've been reading a lot about wartime. For some reason, I got this book about the war in Yugoslavia when it all broke up. Saw this movie last night, which is about the Second World War. And I just became aware that we can have an experience. It happened. Who can take that away from us? But let's face it, it's possible. That's what cruelty and evil try to do, tries to minimize the truth of who we are. That's what it does. And if we're secure in who we are, it doesn't matter. Nobody can take that away from us. But if we're insecure in who we are, it's real easy to do. The most wonderful thing we can do for our brothers and sisters is to appreciate them, acknowledge them, see the beauty of them. So we create soil in which they can grow and feel their magnificence, and nobody can take it away from them.
Let's face it. This is Barney. You got to face the fact that the universe, for whatever reason, gave each of us this incredible thing, which is like self-awareness. And it comes in a package, like a combo, like self-awareness and will. It's a great deal here. You can get it at any drive-in universe, actually, here. Drive up, drive in, drive through, whatever. It's the self-awareness. So there's this gift. You're given this body system and the consciousness and the emotions, and you're aware of yourself here. And it seems like you're the whole thing. It's like the self-awareness. It's like the great risk, if God could risk anything. I don't think God actually can risk, but if it was like he could pretend that he could risk, he risked having this unconsciousness pervade the universe of self-awareness without expanding awareness. You know what I'm talking about there, Rochelle?
Let's face it. Sometimes I do and sometimes I don't.
All right, we can face that, but let's face it a little later when the facing comes due. Right now, I just want to say that we have self-awareness. We have this sense of who we are. And then what's supposed to happen is that gets filled up with life experience and other people and impressions and on the decisions you make. And that self-awareness keeps expanding until it becomes more and more inclusive of more and more stuff. And it gets in that way more and more like the source of all life, who's saying, do my will. What does that mean? That means expand your sense of self-awareness, your awareness of yourself, to include more and more stuff. But yet, let's face it, in our immature state, as you pointed out, people stay within their own self-awareness, thinking it's only about them, and they build up these walls of separation and hate and cruelty and judgment and comparison and all that stuff that keeps people perpetuating the separation until such time as that they have to face it. We're getting to that time. That's so. It's a good thing to let's
face it. You know,
for
me to face it was, and I'm saying this as the past, but what I faced was that I can look outside and see, oh, this is what's going on with the world. And then, but then I looked inside and I realized I was all those things. I was immature. I was scared. I needed to be affirmed because I was afraid I wasn't there. I needed to push off people to know that I existed. And the realization that I could do something about that because I was with me 24/7. Anybody I judge, as a smattering of time I'm with them, I can't do anything for them other than to really work on myself. And the more I work on myself, the more I can be there for somebody else. But not in a way to fix them or make them different, but to be there for them so that they fall down, I can lend a hand.
You know, when Rochelle works on herself, I watch her every day, of course, because we live here together. And besides doing our show Inside Out, the Naked Truth Weekly, I watch her work on herself. What's interesting to me are all the various tools that she pulls out. Sometimes she'll pull out a hammer or a saw, a chisel.
And, it was like a building my house.
And the nails, and she works on herself, and she tears down one part because that part didn't fit with the new emerging part that is who she is now. So it's constantly working on yourself. It's constantly like a breaking down. It reminds me of that time we were in New York, and your friend told us about her grandchild who was looking at some of the building that was going
in New York City.
And the grandchild said to his grandmother.
Actually, it was her daughter.
Oh, it was her daughter as a little girl?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. But she said to her, when are they going to be done?
When are they going to be done building New York? There was always construction, and there is still. And that's it. We're not done. When you have a self-awareness, it's going, oh, I need to move this around. I need to fix this. I need to work on this. Wow, why did I get angry with that person? Why did they scare me? What was I afraid to lose in that moment? And when you ask the right questions, the answers are always available. I'm amazed at that all the time.
Sure, but it is that there. This is Father O'Malley speaking of the right questions, and I'm so glad to be back here. We're facing it with you. We're all facing it together. But this, the Course in Miracles says, you don't even really know the question to ask. One of the lessons in the Course in Miracles says there, the first question is, well, what's the question? And so that way, it's a good, clean place to start, because if, assuming what they say might perhaps be true, that you don't know what to ask, then the first thing to ask is, what's the question? So you listeners out there, you might stop and ask yourselves, well, what is the question? You may not be having a question, but believe me, a lot of people are having a question. It can be as simple as, where are we going to get fed? To something perhaps more complex.
Why doesn't he love me?
Why doesn't he love me, right? Why doesn't he love me the way
I've decided
he should love me. There you have it, dear. And that's, again, why we talk about going within there, that you can't get away from it. There's just this basic thing about going within. Now, lots of people ask me, Father O'Malley, what is the within? What are you talking about? Where is it? Well, it's not easy to put a finger on where it is, because it's not without, you see. It's within, and everything without you can point to. But within, you can't really point to anything there. It's just within. It's within your own consciousness. It's within that whole self-awareness you were talking about. It's something that's within. It's digging down into the parts of you that are causing the other parts to do what they do and asking it, well, what are you doing that for?
The most vivid example of self-awareness is with athletes. Really good athletes are self-aware, and not in a judgmental sense. They know what works, and it's not working. They make adjustments, and they make it better, and they're constantly working on it. And performers are like that, people who play instruments so that they can hear it. And actors, you're trained to have like a third eye where you're watching yourself and you're going, whoa, that did not hit the mark. You know, I have to move it here, or I have to dig deeper into my emotional body so that it hits the mark, that the ball goes into the hoop, that the ball is delivered down
the alley.
What's the other thing in football? It's not an alley. It's the field.
Down the
that
field.
The ball is delivered down the field.
Not the alley.
And it ends up exactly where the receiver is. They're wonderful things to watch. And when they actually happen and they're doing it right and everything is in position and everybody's playing their part and is totally aware of what's happening, there's this magic moment. Remember that movie with Kevin Costner? He was a baseball player or something. He was a pitcher. And like he'd wind up, and then all the noise would disappear, right. And he'd be in the zone.
Right.
I loved that zone, and I love being in that zone. And when you're in that zone, whatever happens, it just feels so right. Let's face it, there's nothing better than the zone.
But sometimes we have to, and this goes back to what we were talking about before, we have to kind of divest ourselves, like Yeshua said, you can't put new wine in old wineskins. So sometimes it's just good to kind of go down to the river and let it go. Really
and find the wineskins.
I've done a bad thing, it's okay. I'm going down to the river today. And the river's gonna wash my sins away. I'm born again tomorrow. Water, get over.
head, make me forget my sorrow. I'm going down to the river alone. Don't tell mama and daddy I'm gone. And if they cry when I don't come home, just lie and tell them I'm funning. Oh, to get out of my eyes into the river wide I'm running. And I can't swim, but it's alright, 'cause all my sin would drag. Trouble I'm in. So if I don't come back again, go lie beneath the willow. 'Cause where I carved my name is where my soul will remain, and I'll still go. Lord, and I can't swim, but it's alright, 'cause all my sin will drag. In my mind, and I'll tell him I wanna know why, oh why, when he's so damn forgiven. My daddy won't look in my eyes, mama knows the lies I'm living. Oh, and I can't swim, but it's alright, 'cause all my sin would drag me down even if I could.
The River by Audra May.
I don't know why, but that's a little disturbing song to me.
Well, let's take a look at it. First of all, she's talking about her sin. Evidently, she feels that the lyrics seem to suggest that she did something with some guy one night, and if she hadn't done that, she'd be a good girl. I would like to reframe it. Oh, do you want to jump in, Professor?
Yeah, this is Professor Schnitzel here. I would like to reframe it for you, with you, if you don't mind my jumping.
No, go ahead, go ahead. How would you see it?
Well, it has to do with the way we look at sin. I like to think of sin as three letters in English. My English is not so good, but it's good enough to be able to understand these three letters. Sin, S period, I period, N period. And to me, what that means is seduced into nonsense. It's seduced into the belief that things are like not getting along in the universe, and that it's everything is opposed to each other things, and it's not like working as truth, but it's not the way it is. It's nonsense. And so when you face it.
But nonsense meaning no sense at all.
Makes no sense. Think about the craziness that people are doing to each other. It's nonsense. It makes no sense. Like the people who killed the other people, where was that, in Southern California, yeah?
San Bernardino.
They killed these people, this mother who has a baby or her husband, and they go out and kill other innocent people, as if everyone is innocent or guilty. If they're killing people who are not prepared to be killed that way, and why is that? What could be so twisted in their consciousness to make them like that? Because we in Germany, we are still smarting from the shame of the fact that so much of that was happening once in my lifetime, quite frankly, when in the 40s. I was like a little boy. Yeah. It was not good.
Well, Professor, well, we've had a lot of professors here tonight. I feel like I'm in academia. once again, you know, I'm always talking about evolution and being mature and immature and being children. And I'm just so aware, really so ignorant. Let's face it, we're just ignorant of the fact that we are all one. If you looked at a picture of this planet from a different vantage point, you just raise up a little bit. See all these little people running around. You can't distinguish this is this and that's that. And the difference is they're just a bunch of people running around, you know, and making up the planet and the trees and all the stuff. And it's all part of the fabric of the whole. We're so mired in the muck of being right here that we can't see above that. Sometimes when I have a bad day, I really just allow myself to elevate myself above where I am, to see it from a higher perspective. And it changes. It just changes for me because I realize, well, it's such a small little thing in the scheme of everything. And I can get caught up in it if I want to, but I really don't need to. When I see it from above, it just doesn't seem very significant anymore.
If I may jump back in here, this is Senator Beauregard. The image that I think is useful is the whole idea of the seed having to break into the ground. Because the way I look at it here, the problems that we are facing really can't be solved. The solution to those problems have to be grown. That's right, grown. Because a whole new species, in other words, a very different kind of human perspective that is being embodied by the emergent people now as they're coming into the planet at this time, the little ones. And so our biggest opportunity here is to create environments that nurtures this heightened awareness of these little ones, but they can't do it independently. The families have to support that, and ideally the families and the schools and the media and the friends and everything, which is why in Human Potter we want to make it possible for these families to learn how to do that. It's a skill that people need to learn as part of the process of making a more perfect union, and certainly at the very least having some domestic tranquility, not be having all the members of the family beating up on each other.
And I do believe that that's possible. I'm also aware that for some individuals, families, tribes, cultures, it's not readily available yet, consciously speaking. It's not within the consciousness to even want that.
But if it can be seen now, when you extend yourself beyond the expected, beyond convention, beyond predictability, and actually extend and reach out in service to someone who's not expecting it, that is a very powerful way to begin to, at the very least, shake their paradigm so that they can begin going, huh? Of course, be aware now, when they go into confusion, they are liable to want to strike out at you, so just be aware of that. But nevertheless, it's kind of a necessary part of the journey is go and get confused before you get clear.
The interesting thing about climate change is that it affects the planet. It doesn't affect one person. It affects all of us. A tsunami hits the continent, and everyone is affected by it. It's not like only the good people are going to be affected by it. Only the bad people are going to be affected by it. Everybody. It levels the playing field. If we can use that to realize that we're in this together, that it's not a divisive thing. Let's say, if we need a common enemy in terms of our consciousness, let that be the common enemy that we need to work with and learn how to live with and understand and see how we play a part in it and how we can make it better.
Well, I don't think we have a whole lot of choice. I think the enemy is encroaching in mighty leaps and bounds and is upon us. It's good to hear that even the Pope of the Catholic Church here was someone who says we need to face it and take responsibility for what we're leaving behind in the wake of all our aggressive capitalism, because it is leaving a wake of toxicity that is affecting everything. And I can just veritably feel the ice caps melting as we speak.
Let's face it.
What?
I believe it's possible. I guess because I believe that humans are extraordinarily adaptable. And even though they don't always see what's coming and we're short-sighted, nevertheless, when it starts emerging, our minds are so creative that we start moving into that place. And I think that that ignition of creative juices is very exciting. And I guess maybe I'm just a born optimist, but I believe it's possible for us to come into union, to find wonderful solutions, to change the way we live on this planet.
Well, it really is an issue of the heart. So let's just take a minute to listen to Luca Bloom as he talks about the kind of heart man that we need to become to deal with this.
I know a man whose religion is just a gale. It's how he learns to live. Walking with the poor, he's on solid ground for sure. Heart of mine, won't you shine? Heart of mine, won't you shine? Heart of mine, won't you shine? It's your time. Heart of mine. I know a man of ambition, doing a deal was his only goal. He woke up one day and gave it all away for his heart and soul. Yeah. I know a man who's made mistakes, whose heart breaks, who can be alone. Black dog creeps, he digs deep and just soldiers on. Yeah, heart of mine, won't you shine? Heart of mine, won't you shine? Heart of mine, won't you shine? It's your time, heart of mine.
And he continues the lyrics with, a wise man once told me, give a little thanks to enemies. They teach me how to let go, how to be free, how to find the better side of me. Heart man, could it be you? Could it be me? Heart man, Luca Bloom, thanks for that reminder. So this is Inside Out, the Naked Truth. It's December 15th. We're so grateful to Go Raw for being a sponsor, and you can get Go Raw products at Costco,
Whole Foods, Trader Joe's, and Safeway.
And check into Universe Spirit to find out how you can get involved in this whole climate change transformation. I personally believe that our communication skills have to get really, really improved in order for us to make the kind of impact that we need. And sometimes in our intense focus on the subject and the task at hand and the difficulty, we forget how important it is looking at how we communicate with each other to make sure there's ongoing understanding, especially when there's differences. Because God knows, let's face it, there are and will be differences. That's why we come on every week, to try and probe into these essential questions and to get to the naked truth. And that's why Rochelle and I have embarked upon this path of probing. And along with it, it comes not taking ourselves too seriously, though Rochelle has a little more problem with that.
I beg your pardon.
We did that program. Let's face it.
Let's face it. Let's not call the kettle black.
Oh, I'm sorry. I guess that was a mistake. We're facing it tonight. We've looked at a number of things. We want to thank our guest, as usual, for bringing in some really interesting perspectives. Please join us again next week. But let's face it.
Resistance is what you add to pain to make it last longer and hurt more. Let's face it.
Let's face it. Our co-sponsor for this program is Universe Spirit, providing education on Job 1 for Humanity, Climate Restabilization.
Come visit UniverseSpirit.org and learn more about the great adaptive challenges and transformative evolutionary adventures of our future.